And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, secrets today. We're going to talk about secrets, and this is volume 180. Jerry over in the broadcasting booth, volume 180. Every month we do one of these. I love it. We can talk about some secrets and document some things. Now, some of these are in various, newspapers and such, but they don't always give you the full story. And there's nothing I like better than, let's just say, to supplement, augment, and add to the facts. You know, sometimes, friends, I think the best liars are just the ones that don't give you all the facts. They give you a little bit, or they put their little spin on it. And you leave thinking you've got all the information. It's been documented. When in reality, he's left out certain essential things that you need to know that could change the entire reflection. You know, the Bible says that when you listen to a person, sometimes you think you know the whole story, but you don't until the other fellow speaks. And then you find out it's not always the way the first man said it was. Well, we know that because in our media today, my goodness gracious, do we not have a group of liars and prevaricators and quibblers and spin artists? It's unbelievable, isn't it? That's why I'll tell you, and this is my job for you. I work for you. I have my big boss. He comes first. His name is Jesus, and I'm going to do what he says. But then after that, I work for you. You know, I'm down to the bottom of the totem pole, Jerry. You know, some people say, boy, you've got it made. You know, you're founder of your own ministry. You're president. You do whatever you want. That's not so. That's not. Sometimes I do what I want and God says, you did the wrong thing. I'm going to give you a chance to fix it, Tex. Oh, every once in a while that happens. And you know, I'm always happy to do so because I know if I don't, the big boss, he's got the final say about things and it's great to please him. Now I've always found that you please yourself when you please God, friends. Listen to that again. You please yourself when you please God. You know, Crowley, the Satanist, the British Satanist, one of the most infamous of all times, he's the one who created, and Anton LaVey, founder of the Church of Satan, brought it up later on and implemented it in wrote about it in his book, The Satanic Bible. That's right, friends. There is a Satanic Bible. You can buy a copy of it. I don't want you to, but you can buy a copy at any major bookstore. Or you can order it from Amazon.com. What am I telling people that for? But maybe because I know my audience won't go out and buy the darn thing. It's just a piece of satanic junk, believe me. But in any case, Crowley created the one commandment, the greatest commandment of all Satanists. And here's what it is. Do as thou will shall be the whole of the law. And I looked at that and I said, well, you know, that's far from Christianity. Here's the great commandment, you know. And I know Jesus gave one, you know, that you should love God with all your heart. That's the greatest commandment. And I suppose the second would be, do as God wills shall be the whole of the law. You know, I've always loved the part. Remember that popular song some years ago by that black girl? She had a beautiful voice. Unfortunately, she got into cocaine and alcohol. Whitney Houston, that was her name. Yeah, beautiful voice, using for Satan rather than God, unfortunately. But the name of the song and the lyrics went something like this. Loving yourself is the greatest love of all. What a lovely voice when she sang that song. But the words were nothing but satanic trash. Loving myself or yourself is the greatest love of all. It was a huge international smash hit. And I bet Satan was up there just laughing at the idiocy of people to think that that was true. Friends, the Bible says you're to love God with all of your heart. And after that, you're to love your neighbor as yourself. Isn't that amazing? You don't even come in second, friends. It's a holy tie. Love your neighbor as you do yourself. Some people say, well, Tex, the real problem why the prison cells are filling up is people don't have self-esteem. Oh, baloney. The reason they're filling up, my friends, the prison cells are filling up is people have too much self-esteem. They esteem themselves. They hold themselves in higher regard than they do those whom they have hurt and damaged. You go rape someone, a young girl, obviously it has to do with your selfishness, your ruthlessness, your lack of empathy. Did you know that's the number one trait of psychopaths and sociopathic killers? Studies have shown. I'm just reading several new books out about psychopathy. I'm doing some research on the psychology of the psychopath. And I discovered, and it's true, that the one thing you can say for sure about a psychopath is they love themselves. They're the only ones they care about. They're narcissistic, selfish. They have no empathy. That means sympathy for others. They cannot feel the pain of others. They have no remorse when they hurt others. In effect, they basically have no soul. Well, there's a secret for you right there. Psychopaths have no empathy. They love themselves. And to them, just like Whitney Houston said, that's the greatest love of all. But that's not what Jesus said. But it is what Mr. Crowley said, the British Satanist. It's what the Satanic Bible, authored by Anton LaVey, head of the Church of Satan, said. So listen to Whitney Houston and you'll be pleasing the devil. And I only wish you could talk to Mr. Crowley or Mr. LaVey about that, but they're sort of busy right now. You see, they've died. And they're busy right now in a place called hell. You know, it's interesting, Jerry. I opened up Newsweek magazine one time and they had an announcement that said Anton LaVey died. They used to have a little section called milestones. Milestones. And it was really sort of like obits, you know, obituaries. And it had the date. It said, you know, Anton Xander LaVey died. And right next, you know, the next line down said same date. It said Edmund de Rothschild died. Edmund de Rothschild died the very same day as LaVey. They went to meet the same person. They live in the same place. And believe me, my friends, it's not the Rothschild mansion in Great Britain or France that they're living at. And I got another secret to reveal to people today. Did you know in the book of Habakkuk in the Old Testament, it says that hell is never finished. The devil is always enlarging it. How about that? Have you ever lived in a city that they just keep building and building and building? I have. Hell continues to be expanded. I mean, there's architects down there, evidently, that are just busy. There's builders. There's carpenters. There's masons. You can go down there and help them. I understand the wages aren't very good, and there's hellish work conditions. And don't try to talk to the union stewards about it. Nobody to talk to. Habakkuk, hell is ever being enlarged. And they need to. There's always more and more people going there. It's not air conditioned either, by the way. Just so you'll know if you end up there. Well, you know, there's a guy that I don't agree with him politically, but a lot of what he says is just great. Congressman Dennis Kucinich, Democrat of Ohio. Recently he spoke, in fact, Thursday, July the 14th, the day before my birthday. He spoke on the House floor House of Representatives about the massive transfer of wealth from the American people to the hands of the few. How do they do it? How are the wealthy able to, by stealth, almost by alchemy or magic, take away money from you and me and put it in their own coffers? How do they get away with it? He said, well, they do it by virtue of wars, energy policies, and monetary policies. Okay, let's look at it. Oil, energy, that is, war, and money policies. And right now, we've been having a debt political theater. A debt, D-E-B-T, political theater. He said that's been diverting the attention of people. While the fat cats of Wall Street, the Rothschilds and all the others, have been stealing Americans' wealth and breaking the back of America, we've been busy worried about the Republicans and the Democrats and who's going to win the debate about cutting the budget of this many billion or trillion, and whether, you know, Senator Harry Reid of Nevada or Congressman Boehner of Ohio and you know, Paul Ryan, congressman, and his committee, well, what they did to cut the budget. And then every day it seems like Obama comes out and wants to have another big 10 minutes on the air to bedazzle people on national TV. I've never seen a guy go out before the people so often. He really believes he's an orator. Evidently, he's pretty effective. And while they're playing games and, you know, pretending to be Shakespearean theater boys and girls, they're stealing our money. You know, that's what magicians do. They divert your attention in one place, and then their hands are busy over here. Pickpockets do the same thing. And this debate over the debt, we don't understand that both the Republicans and the Democrats are conspiring to steal from our pockets. While they're shooting their mouths off and it's getting all this heat and all this press and all the news media, their filthy, dirty little hands are going down, you know, our back hips and into our pockets, and they're stealing from our purses and our pocketbooks. Meanwhile, where does the money go? Well, it's taken from the American people, says Congressman Kucinich, and put into the hands of arms manufacturers, war profiteers, even private armies. You know, I had some friends of mine. One, in fact, was a Marine major. I tell you, this guy had all kind of awards. I mean, when he wore his Marine dress uniform, I mean, those medals just came all the way down the side. I don't know how the guy stood up straight. He had so many weighty awards on. I worked with him at the University of Texas. The guy was an amazing guy. He broke the world's record. What is that? The Believe It or Not, Ripley's Believe It or Not or whatever? No, there's another one. Guinness. Yeah, the Guinness Book of World Records. For the number of pull-ups. He did it right at the University of Texas where I was teaching. He said, hey, Tex, come over and see me break the Guinness Book of World Records for the number of pull-ups. And I went over there. They had a Marine band at the gymnasium at the University of Texas in Austin. And this Marine band was doing the, you know, the Marine anthem, playing it. Well, here's my friend. When he had this crew cut, he always looked sharp as a tack. I mean, his uniform, everything was spectacular. You know, his shoes were, you could see your face in them almost. Spit polished. But there he was. He was going at it. And I don't know. I mean, I really don't know how many he did, but it was like way over 1,000. And it took him like 11 hours or something. Nonstop. Well, this guy had some muscles. He bought him a brand new Camaro, and he took it down to one of these paint stores and had it custom painted camouflage color. You know, camouflage is the, you know, like the olive drab and green and brown. He had it painted. So, you know, you see him driving around town. That was my friend, the major. We had a big dance, you know, for the cadets and everything. I was an Air Force ROTC there, a professor. And, of course, the services each would have their own big prom or whatever, big dance. And for the co-eds and the cadets, you know. And we would invite the other service. So he came in his dress uniform. He had two dates. He had two girls. He was single. He would never think of marrying. Hey, marriage? I'm a Marine. I kill. I don't marry, you know. That was his attitude. One girl was a beautiful black girl, and one girl was a beautiful blue-eyed blonde girl. He had one on each arm. And he had, you know, the typical Marine officer attitude. He had a big plaque on his wall, and it was painted on there, the letters that said, you know, I forget the exact words, but I know some of the military guys will remember this. It was like, kill them all and let God sort them out later. You know, don't worry about who's innocent or guilty. Kill them all and let God sort them out later. Sort of a brutal thing. The only thing, though, that was able to defeat this guy was my good friend, Captain Mark Jacob. And by the way, he was not Jewish, but his name was Mark Jacob. He was Air Force like I was. And Mark had the greatest wit of all. And this major would come around talking about how great the Marines were. You know, a few good men. And he would actually brag. He said, I've killed so many men with my bare hands. I didn't doubt it at all. Can you imagine all those pull-ups? I didn't want to get in that guy's grip. Let me tell you, you know, I was just like so many Air Force pilots and such. They sat in seats. They didn't kill with their bare hands, you know. Aircraft seats, in other words. But anyway, he would brag. And he would talk about what a killer he was, a trained killer. I can kill men with my bare hands, he said. And Mark Jacob would laugh at him. And the Marine guy, he was a great guy. He had a sense of humor, too. Mark Jacob would say, that's nothing. I'm a missile officer. Missile officer. He said, we turn one key, we can kill millions at a time. And that was his job. He was the guy that went down in the missile silo, you know, in Montana or somewhere way down, you know, in the dusty bowels of the earth. And he and the other officer down there, if they got the orders by code, they were to turn their little, each of them had a key, and they were a certain distance from each other. They had to turn it at the same time, and they would shoot off these ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missiles. And, of course, it's true. With one missile, you could kill 2 or 3 million people in the city with nuclear, you know, armed missile. So he would say, how many men can you kill in 30 minutes' time? That's about how long it took an ICBM to get to Soviet Union or China or somewhere. In 30 minutes time, I can kill over 1 million. How many could you kill? Of course, that, you know, almost embarrassed the poor Marine guy. You know, his, what would he, how many could he kill? 100? 200? I don't know. What was he, some kind of Samson guy killing them with the, well, anyway, with a bone? But, here I was sitting there listening to these two guys argue about how many they could kill within 30 minutes. Marine officer and Air Force officer. Now, that's gruesome. I mean, that's just like, you know, civilians would not understand that kind of talk. And I just sat there and laughed at both of them, you know. I always considered myself a little bit more genteel than my Marine and Air Force friends. Probably not true, but anyway, that's what I considered myself. Now, Kucinich says the money is going to the hands of these arms manufacturers, war profiteers, and private armies. He says that $3 trillion has been the cost of the war in Iraq alone, and that was based on lies. The war in Afghanistan, he said, is based on a misreading of history, and that has cost us already $500 billion. And the war against Libya, well, that's about $1 billion every month now. What are we doing in Libya anyway? Did Gaddafi ever attack us? No. Of course, did Saddam Hussein? No. Now, friends, they want to take away your Social Security and Medicare, at least part of it, and kill the middle class, and break the back of America, so they can fight more wars for a greater Israel. That's all it's all about. That's the Rothschild plan. Creative destruction of America. Now, according to President Obama and House Speaker Boehner, they're under threat. They have to do something to cut the budget. And by the way, I agree. I mean, the budget, federal budget, is bloated beyond measure. And I'll tell you, I've been finding out some things recently about where the money is going that absolutely make me sick. I've discovered, for example, that if you want to make a living in many states in America and you don't want to work, get pregnant. 90% of black women who are pregnant have their child out of wedlock. They're not married. Now, if you're a person, black or white or Hispanic or yellow Chinese for that matter, living in America, whether you're an illegal alien or an American citizen, let me tell you the goodies you can get here. If all you do is just go have unprotected sex and get pregnant. First of all, you can get, to start with, you and your child can get $367 in food stamps. That's the first thing. No questions asked. $367 a month in food stamps. In many states like California, you can get a cash aid grant of anywhere from $700 to $1,300 a month. Now, we're already up to $1,700, right? And it goes up from there. Did you know, Jerry, in California, in some states, the young girl who's pregnant, out of wedlock, they'll pay for the baby to be born. They'll pay for all the doctor's visits. She doesn't have to have any insurance. It's paid for by the state. Not only that, did you know they'll pay for all the diapers? They'll pay for all the baby food and all that. It's incredible. Pay for your baby's diapers even. And if you'll agree to go to school or something, they'll give you another $700 or $800. Pretty soon you're up to around $3,000 for having a baby out of wedlock. I mean, they're making more than if they went out and got a job. And most of these are high school dropouts besides. I just saw an expose on YouTube in Georgia. They went to these WIC offices, WIC, government offices, and they pretended to be people that needed help. The woman went in and said, I'd like to apply for WIC, you know, and they said, okay, maybe, you know, fill out this form and can we see your ID card or driver's license? She said, you know, I forgot them. I don't have any. They said, that's okay. We'll give it to you anyway. Come to find out, they've been told, the people that work there, don't turn down anybody. Everybody who applies gets it, whether they deserve it or not. Now, this is what happened during the great mortgage crisis. The reason for America's fall was these subprime mortgages. Listen to this. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of illegal Mexican aliens, came to America and were told to make out fake mortgage applications, and every one of them got a mortgage loan and moved into a nice house. Even the illegal aliens that were not working, that didn't have a job, were given a house. And they said, well, how are we going to pay for this house, this brand new house? And the illegal aliens were told, and, you know, all the way up to 2008 when everything just crashed, they were told it doesn't matter whether you pay for it or not. If you don't pay any payments, after about a year or two, we'll foreclose you on you. But you'll have free rent until then. And not only that, when we foreclose on you, it'll take us about a year to get you out. But wait, the bank or mortgage institution will probably offer you a deal and roll over the loan into a brand new loan, and you can stay 2 more years. They were told you might be able to stay 3 or 4 years in this house and never pay a penny and lie on it. Lie and say you have a job and say that you have an income. But don't I have to give you, you know, W-2s, forms and all these things? Oh, we'll make that up for you. They faked it. Now, I'm getting to something. There are two major rating agencies on Wall Street, Moody's and Standard & Poor's. And they supposedly give ratings on mortgages. How, you know, what is the likelihood that this person will pay this debt that has this mortgage? AAA is the best you get, I suppose. And all of these illegal aliens, millions of them, got AAA ratings, even though they had fake bogus applications. AAA ratings. They just had a rubber stamp. And rubber stamped them and gave them AAA. Now, according to the Secretary of Treasury, Tim Geithner, and our Fed Reserve Chairman, Ben Bernanke, it's the same two rating agencies, Moody's and Standard and Poor's, that are now threatening to reduce the AAA credit rating of America to AA. They can almost bankrupt America by reducing our credit rating. Now, remember, these are the two rating agencies that rated hundreds and hundreds of thousands of mortgage applications and gave them this bogus AAA ratings. And they did the same thing for corporations, the stock of corporations. Some NASDAQ stock would come in, some Wall Street stock, be selling for $500 a share. And Moody's would put out a report and say, a great bargain, it's worth every cent, AAA rating. Well, during the bust of 1998 and then the second bust that came along of 2008, guess what? Many of those corporations went out of business. They never deserved a AAA rating. I know of one company that was selling for $500 a share, and Moody's gave it a AAA rating, and comes the financial crash, and the company went out of business. They ended up selling for 50 cents a share. They had been $500 a share, and Moody's said they were a bargain, AAA. And now this Moody's and Standard & Poor's is threatening to downgrade the debt of America, and Obama and House Speaker Boehner are jumping through hoops to try to keep the AAA rating. Let me tell you what should happen here, friends. I know how to keep the debt rating, AAA. Let me tell you how to do it. It's called send law enforcement in to arrest the whole executive staff of Moody's and Standard Poor's and give them a trial and put them in a federal penitentiary for all the fraud that they did during the subprime debt crash here in America. That's why we're in the fix we're in. That's why we have 20-something percent, even though they say it's only 9.2% unemployment. Because of Moody's and Standard & Poor's and a few other rating agencies that lied, and perjured themselves. And the whole real estate debacle came rolling downhill as fast as can be. And banks flipped like bowling pins in a bowling alley during a championship tournament. And these are the same rating agencies, probably the same executives that probably got bonuses that told us all this trash, this junk bonds and junk stocks and junk subprime mortgages were good deals. And the whole world bought into it. The other night I was watching the Lawrence Kudlow show on CNBC Business Channel, and he puts on the head of Moody's Investor Services. And Kudlow was like bowing down to the guy. Are you going to downgrade American debt? Oh, it's going to hurt us so much. Oh, the American people will suffer. Oh, stock market may fall. Are you really going to do that? And he says, yeah, we might do it. He was acting like he was some kind of a god. He needs to go to prison. The whole staff there, all the CEO, the chairman of the board, every one of them need to go to prison for what they have done to America. And yet we're worried about them downgrading our debt. They won't be able to downgrade diddly squat when they're suffering in a prison cell. Am I a mean man for saying that? Folks, it's time we as Americans said no. This is a debt we don't owe. The banks owe. Wall Street owes. We don't owe anything. And we're tired of the war profiteers making money. Even President Eisenhower, his farewell address, he warned the American people about the unwarranted influence of the military-industrial complex. And Congressman Kucinich is about the only one, he and Congressman Ron Paul, that are willing, that are courageous enough to get up on the floor of the Senate, or the House, Rand Paul in that case, the Senate, and say anything about this. I thank God for them. As far as the other politicians in Washington, D.C., my goodness, just a bunch of trashy people, generally, with a few exceptions. This text, Mars, you're listening to another volume of Secrets here on Power of Prophecy. Stay with us. We got a lot more when we return. Text, Mars, again. Have you got a copy of my new book, Conspiracy of the Six Planet Star? Folks, please, order this book. I'm going to tell you right now, if you get this book and you read this book, and it is a big book, I'll admit, you're going to have to do a lot of reading, but you're going to enjoy reading it. It'll be a blessing to you because it's finally the truth. The truth is here. Now, I've been here on this earth about 7 decades now myself, and I never saw a book like this. Not even a, I mean, a facsimile, not even a, there's nothing like this book. And you know, the amazing thing is when I was writing this book, I was so sick. I was so ill. I mean, sometimes I had got up 15 or 20 times during the night because I was so hurting in my joints. I had this rash on my body. I was just hurting terribly. But I'd get up in the morning and Wanda would cook me a nice breakfast and I would pray and ask the Lord to help me. And I would go over to my work desk and I tell you, it looked like a, oh my goodness. Poor Wanda had to put up, you know, I was too sick to come to work in my office here, and I had magazines and rare manuscripts and reports and letters from people that they had sent me disclosing this or that and historical documents all around me. It was just amazing. It looked like a trash bin. I've seen these TV shows about the hoarders. Well, I was a hoarder. I promised Wanda when this book was finished, I would clean it all up. And I did, by the way. And now my office upstairs in my house, I have a little office up there, you know. You've seen it in my house, Jerry. My goodness, now it's full of stuff. Wanda says, so you moved it from the dining room where you had taken over my dining room. These wives, they put up with a lot, don't they? Now you've moved up to your office, but it looks like a junk. When I have friends over, I have to close the door up there. Well, I'm working on another book now. That's why. But God just poured this book into me. And it starts off firing all 8 cylinders, and it doesn't quit till the end of it. And you know, when I finished this book, I'm going to tell you the truth about it. I had enough stuff for 1,000 pages book. And I said, well, that book could be 6 inches high. Printed. I can't do that. So I took out the best stuff. The 432 pages, friends, that you'll find in this book came from the 1,000 pages. This is the very best from Tex Morris and from God. Now, it's not the Bible. It's not holy. But I still want to give credit to God for making me well enough to write the book. I have no idea how I was able to write this book except God. You know, one pastor friend of mine told me one time that the two greatest words in the dictionary are, but it's really not in the dictionary, but he was just saying that, are the words, but God. But God. And I always liked that. That's the two greatest words in the English language. I was unable, I was too weak, I was incompetent to write and publish this book, but God helped me. But God gave me strength. But God helped my people who worked for me. And let me tell you something. I have the best staff on this planet. I have the best staff on this planet. And we call them the dream team here. the dream team that works for me. That's how I do it. That's how if it weren't for the people that work for me, my staff, I don't know how they put up with me. I don't know why they put up with me, but they do. I don't deserve them like I don't deserve my wife. But I'm not going to give them up. I'm not going to let these wonderful people leave Power Prophecy Ministries. I'm going to fight to keep them here and keep them doing the great job they're doing. And let me tell you something else. I feel that way about the listeners, Jerry. I've got the best listeners in the world, and I'm going to fight to keep them. Now, how do I keep the listeners? How is it that I'm able to stay on the air around 25 years? People say, well, how does that happen? Why aren't you out of business? All the controversy you've been in. Let me tell you how I do it. I simply tell the truth, and the people that listen to Power Prophecy, they enjoy the truth. They enjoy it enough, they keep me going. They pray for me. I get letters. I get help. I'm not kidding you. I've got Christian medical doctors that write to me. Anytime I need help, I've got it out there. God sends people to me. I've told people that before. I was writing a book called Ravaged by the New Age. I just got to, I don't know what chapter it was, chapter 12 or something. And I was pondering what I was going to say in that chapter. And these, there was two women or three women, I think, came to see me. They said, we've got this information that we've never given anybody. One of them told me, said, God gave me a dream and told me to give this to you. These were educated women, had PhDs. I said, God told you to come give me something? They said, yes. I said, what's it about? They told me. It was the same chapter that I was just starting to work on in my new book. And they had an entire huge heap of materials to give me that were revelations to me, that were exposés of what was going on in the educational systems of America. The Satanism that had these evil people had been putting together to poison the minds of our kids. And I was beginning to write on that subject. And here these three ladies come from the Fort Worth Independent School District where they worked. They were curriculum developers. They said, here is our new curriculum we've been told to give to the kids. And we're being forced to do it to keep our jobs. And God said, bring it down to Austin, Texas to give Tex Mars. Well, it's in my book, Ravaged by the New Age. Satan's plan to destroy our children. And I think that's the way God works. I have people who listen to this program. They may think, well, Tex Mars is a terrible radio host. I don't like his voice. I don't like something about him. But they still listen. And I value them. I treasure every time I get an email, a letter, certainly a love gift or offering. I treasure the people who listen to this radio program. Now, that's all I'm going to say today. I'm not going to offer anything today. I just want people to understand how much I love them. I do. I love the people. I know I'm a big guy and I'm a Texas guy and I'm from East Texas. You know, we're like those old Hank Williams songs, you know, give us a gun and a, I don't know what, and a pickup truck. And don't try to stop us or bring us down. Well, that's the way I was raised, but I'm telling some right now, I'm big enough to say this. That I love these folks. I love them. Somebody told me never tell anybody you love them except your wife. That's what I was told many years ago. Don't tell anybody you love them except your wife. I had a guy one time, wonderful ministry leader, and he said, I love you, Tex. I went, whoa, just a minute. I was afraid he might be gay or something. Men aren't supposed to tell each other they love them. But I found out later that's the way he felt. He was a Christian. He was full of love for people. Then I thought, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. And I don't tell other women I love them. That get me in a lot of trouble. But if under the right circumstances, I would tell them if Wanda was there with me and it could be understood correctly. Folks, thank you for being the kind of audience that I have fallen in love with. I want to thank my staff that they are the kind of people, workers who care, and I love them, and I love my wife, Wanda, and most of all, I love the Lord Jesus. Now, there you go. There's a great commercial, and if you love us, I want you to do one thing for me, friends. I want you to write me a note and tell me you appreciate me and appreciate this ministry. Now, if you don't, you can write me a mean letter, too. I don't mind. I read those sometime. I thank God for the mean letters. Sometimes they get me straightened out. I don't know. Do I need straightening out? Okay, write me a letter. Straighten me out. But if you do love what we're doing, tell us, would you? We'd like to hear from you. Especially tell us you're praying for us. And those letters encourage me. They encourage me when the saints pray for me. Let me tell you, the Bible says that God inhabits the prayers of the saints. When you pray to God, did you know he comes to live with you? There's something supernatural there. Okay, let's return to our regular program. We're going through a volume of secrets. Hey, you know, they had a legislation that was introduced in the Texas legislature. It died, unfortunately. It was a bill to make it a felony for the transportation department at the airports to grope people in their private parts. That's what they're doing now, you know. But Governor Rick Perry and Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst and the Texas Speaker of the House Legislature, Joe Strauss, who is nothing more than a Zionist Rothschild agent, he is openly Jewish and a Zionist, they killed it. Now, the guy who introduced the bill was State Representative David Simpson, and I want to tell you what he had to say about, and you remember this, friends, remember Rick Perry is going to run for president on, you know, and try to get the Republican nomination. You remember what this jerk, Governor Rick Perry, did, would you? He is also a member of the Bilderbergers. He's also gone to the Bohemian Grove meeting. And he conspired with foreign corporations to build a North American corridor across Texas, the United States. Governor Rick, the ozone man, because he was once a Democrat and managed the campaign of, yes, he did, of Al Gore. He's running for president now on the Republican ticket, wants to run on the Republican ticket. Governor Rick Perry claims to be Republican, but he used to be the campaign manager for Senator Al Gore. Can you imagine? Oh, he has explanation for everything. This guy has a silver tongue. Anyway, State Representative David Simpson said this. He said, and I want to quote him, "Rarely in the history of this legislature has the state's leadership so masterfully worked against the will of its members and the people whom they represent." He was talking about Rick the Ozone Man Perry, along with Joe Strauss, the Jewish House Speaker. Oh, yeah. Hey, by the way, talking about Bohemian Grove and Bilderbergers, did you know the Bohemian Grove just met this last month? That's right, out of San Francisco, they met. You know, I've studied a lot about it. In fact, we have an entire CD or audio tape about the Bohemian Grove, the wicked men of the Bohemian Grove. I was talking 2 weeks ago to a good old friend of mine named Michael Hansen. He's the only person who wrote the book, a book on the Bohemian Grove. And we're thinking about publishing it here in our ministry. It was a great book, but he didn't have the money to really get it going. Well, we don't have the money either, but we're going to beg, steal, borrow. We're not going to steal. Maybe beg and borrow. We're not going to steal, folks. I shouldn't say those things. Those old sayings, you know. Some of those old sayings aren't the best, you know. But anyway, I'm going to beg and I'm going to borrow and do whatever I can to publish this book on the Bohemian Grove. It was Michael Hansen that went with my friend Alex Jones, and they snuck in and actually videotaped what was going on behind the scenes. And they said there's so many faggots, homosexual weirdos. And we're talking about presidents, prime ministers, senators, CEOs of the largest corporations in the world. Nelson Rockefeller was there. Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, Newt Gingrich. Oh, yes, he was one of the speakers at the Grove. And they just met again. They meet every year. They now number over 2,400. 2,400. They stay an entire week in the Redwoods outside, about 50 miles outside of South California. Well, let me tell you about another meeting that's taking place every year. In upstate New York, it's Camp Meir, M-E-I-R. It's these Jewish youth that are brought there, and it's a militia. They're taught, you know, how to fight with armaments and all that kind of stuff. You would think that the FBI and the Homeland Security people would be checking these yokels out. On our website right now, powerprophecy.com, you'll find a video all about it. And the person that did this video said that the Jewish Mossad, the spy agency from Israel, funds this thing. Now, I don't know about that. I don't know about the funding. But I wouldn't doubt the Mossad would fund it. Camp Meir. They're training, and this is not the only camp. There's some Jewish militia training camps. I don't know about this Camp Meir, but they're training them to kill us unruly Gentiles someday. These are dangerous groups. Now, if they were Christian militias, they'd have spies and the FBI would be bullying them around and intimidating them and everything. They'd trump up charges and put some of them in jail. But it's okay. They're Jewish. They're Jewish militias. You may remember one of the most vicious militia groups in the United States was the Jewish Defense League. They pretty well fallen apart now. The leader, a guy out from California, was arrested for planning to blow up someplace, some building. But while he was in jail, somebody did him in, cut his throat and threw him over a balcony, and he crashed down on the floor below. I suspect it was the Jewish Mossad. When you know too much, they're going to get rid of you. And they did to that guy, the head of the Jewish Defense League. Hey, did you hear about this Project Gunrunner and a companion operation done by the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms people, the ATF, working with Homeland Security and the Justice Department? It was a government initiative to fight the flow of guns into Mexico. They said the Mexican drug cartels, thugs, criminals, were getting guns from the United States and murdering all these people. Every day, a dozen or more people are murdered by these drug cartels. It's dangerous to visit anywhere in Mexico today, friends. Just yesterday, I turned on TV and they said four headless bodies were observed hanging from a bridge, all murdered by these cartels. They are abducting hundreds of Mexicans and tourist Americans and taking them out into the boonies and conducting satanic witchcraft rituals, cutting their throat and using many of their body parts as talismans and charms so the devil will protect them. They're saying the devil will protect me if I worship him by sacrificing human beings. The drug cartels have turned into Satanists. Some of the drug cartels are now calling themselves the New Knights Templar. And so the head of the Attorney General, forget his name, the Attorney General's office. What is it? Yeah, Eric Holder. What a crazy that guy is. Incompetent. Eric Holder, the Attorney General, came up with a plan, evidently. He and the FBI and their ATF associate and the Drug Enforcement Administration. They were going to fight the flow of guns into Mexico by bringing guns to the Mexican cartels. Now, the plan at first, they claimed, was to put a microchip in these machine guns and assault rifles and pistols and so forth. And they could be able to track them and find out where the Mexican drug cartels were importing guns into the United States. But at the last moment, the Attorney General said, we've changed our mind. We're not going to put the chips in. Let's give the guns out anyway. Huh? Whoa. They facilitated, to use a big word, the acquisition of thousands of U.S. guns by Mexican drug cartels and murderous gangs. And they didn't even conduct surveillance on where the guns were going. Now, nobody really knows how many guns they gave to the Mexican drug cartels. Gave them free. It was called Project Gunrunner, also Operation Fast and Furious. Sort of like NASCAR, you know, the NASCAR movie. The revelations that are coming out now have a lot of people in an uproar. Because every week, all of these drug war deaths. Over 35,000 people have been killed since the Mexican government declared war on the cartels back in 2006. But every time they take down one big cartel boss, 10 more come forth. And now we have been arming them. Now I want to read to you what from the CBS News report. You don't usually trust CBS News, but this time I do. On the phone, one Project Gunrunner source, who did not wish to be identified, told CBS News just how many guns had flooded the black market under the U.S. government and ATF's watchful eyes. The numbers are over 2,500 on that case, by the way. That's how many guns were given to the Mexicans, including some 50 calibers. Friends, your whole torso can be blown apart, cut to rivets by 50 caliber weapons. CBS News says, quote, 50 caliber weapons are fearsome. And for months, the ATF agents followed these 50 caliber rifles and other guns that were headed for the Mexican border. But when they got to the border, they were ordered by the Justice Department in Washington to let the guns go and not to keep track and surveillance of them. One distraught ATF agent was often overheard on ATF radios begging and pleading. The answer, negative. Stand down. give the guns to them. CBS News says at least 11 ATF agents and senior managers voiced fierce opposition. It got ugly, said one. There was screaming and yelling by the agencies. One of the agents was overheard screaming out, "This is crazy. Somebody is going to get killed." Well, guess what, friends? Already, they're now saying that American agents have died from these same guns we gave these drug cartels. And now they're now finding at the scene of many murders in the United States, these guns are being left behind. These guns are the ones being used. Now, some people say, that's crazy, Tex. Why would the American government, and now they're saying there may be up to 50,000 guns that were given the Mexican drug cartels. 50,000 in all. Why would they do that? Well, I'll tell you why, friends. To set Mexico on fire. To destabilize Mexico and all of the states along the border. Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, California. And then, of course, it's going to drift into other states in the United States. These guns will immigrate, just like the illegals do, up into Chicago, into Minneapolis, up to Seattle, Washington, to Philadelphia, to New York City, and so forth. Why would our own government do it? They want to destabilize America. They want you and I to fear the Mexicans. And they want the Mexicans to have the firepower to destroy us so that the American ranchers and homeowners will be too frightened to stay and will vacate and abandon their homes and their ranches and their farms and let the Mexicans have them. That's what they want. And they would like Anglos to hate Hispanics and Hispanics to be able to murder and kill and rape and plunder from the Anglos. But why? Friends, the Bible says that the thief comes only to destroy and to kill. That's what the Bible says. That's what he comes for. These people hate God. Eric Holder, Barack Obama. And by the way, Barack Obama says, "I knew nothing about this. I know nothing." Oh, shut up. That's what the communists did in the Soviet Union. They gave guns out to the... Did you know that Joseph Stalin was actually head of a murderous gang of thugs that during the communist revolution in Russia actually would hold up trains, go in and just murder people on trains, take all their money? They robbed banks. Joseph Stalin was a bank robber in Soviet Russia. The Jews turned out to be bank robbers, drug runners, thieves, homosexual monsters. All of them were homos. Joseph Stalin was a bisexual. Vladimir Lenin was a bisexual. Karl Marx, the theoretician who gave us the Communist Manifesto, was a homosexual monster. Of course. What are homosexuals? Well, the Bible says they're men and women of a depraved mind, bereft of any godliness. They've been turned over to a reprobate mind. That's what the Bible says. And I want you to listen to me. Barack Obama is a homosexual. Let me repeat it. Barack Obama is a homosexual. Larry Sinclair, one of the men who had sex with him, even wrote an entire book about it. Of course, Larry Sinclair is now running for his life. Well, we've got more. Buzz Aldrin, 33rd degree Freemason, claimed he landed on the moon, got off there with Neil Armstrong. I think he was one of the ones that landed on the moon, or at least he went to the moon. I can't remember the exact circumstances. Now I'll have to try to go back and review again the Apollo program. But he was on the first mission to the moon, the Apollo. Now, he was on the Alex Jones show the other day. And Alex Jones said this to Buzz Aldrin. By the way, Buzz Aldrin he's older man now, but he was invited on and performed on the Dancing with the Stars program. Remember that guy, Buzz Aldrin? He's a big, famous celebrity Freemason astronaut. And by the way, he is 33rd degree Mason. Now, if you get my book, Codex Magica, you will see pictures of Buzz Aldrin giving Masonic hand signs and so forth. You will also see this astronaut, Buzz Aldrin, holding up at his Masonic lodge a picture, or excuse me, a pennant, you might say, or a flag, of the double-headed eagle of Freemasonry, the 33rd degree ritual symbol. And in my book, and by the way, I got this, the picture from the New Age magazine. That's the Scottish Rite magazine. It's now called the Scottish Rite Journal. But in December of 1969, the official organ of the Scottish Rite was their New Age magazine. And in that issue, replete with pictures of Buzz Aldrin, was a picture of this emblem, this double-headed eagle symbol or emblem on the pennant. That Buzz, the issue of the New Age magazine explained that Buzz Aldrin, the astronaut, had brought that with him to the moon. When he landed there on, what is it, Tranquility Base or whatever it was. Not only that, in the New Age magazine, there was a letter from Buzz Aldrin. His real name, by the way, is not Buzz, but Edwin E. Aldrin, Jr., NASA astronaut, in which a letter in which he wrote on the NASA, National Aeronautics Space Administration, official stationery. The letter is dated September 19, 1969, in which Buzz Aldrin wrote a letter to the illustrious Luther Smith, 33rd degree, Sovereign Grand Commander of the Supreme Council, 33rd degree in Washington, D.C. Dear Grand Commander, says Aldrin, it was a great moment in my life to be so cordially welcomed to the House of the Temple on September 16, 1969 by you and Grand Secretary General Kleinek, 33rd degree. My greatest pleasure, however, was to be able to present to you on this occasion the Scottish Rite flag which I carried on the Apollo 11 flight to the moon. Now, here's what he told Alex Jones. Jones said to Buzz Aldrin, who was a guest on his program, radio program, we know there's Masonic influence in the founding of the country. What is the Masonic influence on NASA, the National Space Agency? Here's Aldrin's answer. Well, Alex, as far as I can tell, zero. There were some Masonic brothers of mine in Texas that wanted me to take some kind of a Masonic emblem to the moon and make some gesture of, I don't know what it would be a gesture of, but I told them that it was not within my authority to do such a thing. But according to the Scottish Rite's New Age magazine, he did exactly that. And then in a book on Freemasonry, written by a 33rd degree Mason about Buzz Aldrin and the moon landing, the author of this Masonic book, Chris Hodapp, H-O-D-A-P-P, stated, quote, while he was on the moon, Brother Aldrin claimed our lunar neighbor for the Masonic jurisdiction of the Grand Lodge of Texas. He stepped onto the surface of the moon and carried a special deputation from the Grand Master to claim it for the Grand Lodge of Texas. Can you believe that? He claimed the moon, you know, like Christopher Columbus claimed the Americas for Spain. He claimed the moon for the Grand Lodge of Texas. And yet here this lying dog gets up to Alex Jones and says, why, there's no Masonic influence on NASA at all. Some brothers wanted me to take a Masonic emblem to the moon, but I didn't do it. Oh, what's that little boy saying? Liar, liar, pants on fire. Yeah, well, liar, liar, astronaut's uniform on fire. Well, this is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. See, I promised you some secrets today, and we delivered, didn't we? Thanks to God, and thanks to your love and your consideration for God's work here. My prayer, my friend, is that you'll tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy.